Hello and welcome to this podcast, Embedding Personalised Care in Primary Care Networks. My name is Dr. Pauline Foreman. I'm a GP in Watford and the Medical Director for Primary Care Development at the Royal College of GPs. This is one in a series of podcasts that aims to provide support and resources for primary care networks and the many other organisations working at scale in the UK. I'm really pleased to be joined today by Dr. Ollie Hart, GP in Sheffield and Clinical Director of Healy Pass Primary Care Network. Ollie is also the Clinical Commissioning Lead for Person-Centred Care at Sheffield CCG and a Director of Peak Health Coaching, an organisation that uses a health coaching approach to support the introduction of personalised care. Welcome, Ollie.
Thanks, Pauline. Wow, what a mouthful. It's lovely to be chatting to you.
It is quite a resume, isn't it? And from our previous correspondence and conversations, Ollie, you are absolutely passionate about personalised care. How did you develop such an interest?
As a doctor, I've always been interested in what helps other people to thrive and make the best of their situation and circumstances. And we all know, don't we, people have all sorts of horrendous things they have to deal with, both health and non-health. So I've always been interested in the style of practice that allows that to happen best. And clearly general practice is a fantastic sort of setting for that, isn't it? And I've always been interested in the holistic care we provide in general practice. So with primary care networks coming online and, you know, the potential for them to stabilize general practice, I have a real passion for. And then be even more deliberate about the wider connections to, you know, to local community organisations to address these wider determinants of health. You know, sort of connecting people, creating healthy environments, good work, what we eat and move. It just seemed like a great opportunity. So that this is where I am.
So what do you mean by personalised care?
Yeah, it's a really good question, isn't it? And I think a lot of people have different ideas on it. But for me, I think it's a deliberate effort to tailor our care to the individual person. And considering their health, their social, their self-management skills, it's kind of like about not one size fits all, really, because we've tended to medicalize our approach, haven't we? You know, have the diabetes package or the asthma review. And it's often based around what we perceive should be done from a disease perspective rather than the person. So that personalized care is more, you know, there's the universalized personalized care model, which talks about very specific things like shared decision making, collaborative care and support planning, supported self-management, and that leading on to social prescribing and coaching approaches. So, you know, it's a mixture, but for the bottom line for me, it's what allows people to be more engaged and involved in their care, because we know in the end that's how people do best.
And aren't GPs already doing a lot of this shared decision making?
Absolutely. We've been good at it for a long time, haven't we? But I think we slightly mislead ourselves that what we think is doing it anyway is not actually taking advantage of the really up-to-date, cutting-edge stuff we know about behaviour change and coaching approaches. And we can take advantage of that and make our services even better.
And why do you think personalised care is having such a moment?
Well, it's out there, isn't it? You know, the long-term plan came out and, you know, it's a big document, but I don't know about you, but the two really new things for me in there were, you know, around digital applications and this personalised care. And so clearly that's triggered resource and some guidance. It's one of the, you know, personalised care is one of the seven sort of service areas for primary care networks to focus on the next 5 years. You know, we've got link workers directing people towards social prescribing with 100% reimbursement at primary care level. It's the only role for that, isn't it? And of course, now we've got this personalised care institute being set up through the Royal College of GPs, the National Academy for Social Prescribing. There's lots of stuff going on, isn't there?
The Royal College of GPs is going to be the convener for the Personalised Care Institute, which is a very exciting project. You're a CD yourself, a clinical director, and you must understand better than most people what that feels like. And many clinical directors report feeling quite overwhelmed at the moment by the expectations on them. Why should they prioritise embedding personalised care across their organisation?
Well, I feel for my fellow CDs. I know we're probably the sort of people that like to spin a few plates. So we're reasonably used to it. And GPs, we're used to uncertainty and challenge, aren't we? And, you know, certainly it's new stuff. And new stuff takes physical and mental, emotional energy. So you've got to see what's in it for you, haven't you? So the thing about personalized care for me is tailoring your approach is very much the benefit of the patient and the practitioner. It's about doing more of what works, but crucially more of what less of what doesn't work. So, you know, these days nobody ever really tells you what you can stop doing, what you can do less of. But if we have a sort of an evidence-based and smart way of saying, look, right now this sort of set of things isn't going to be useful for this person, it might be part of the package that we think they ought to have, but it's not going to be so useful as actually focusing on this. So You know, it allows us to focus our energies where we think we can have most input, and that releases us some time because we stop doing the stuff that isn't going to be right at that right time.
So it might have some potential to reduce GP and other professionals' workload in the team, do you think?
Absolutely. That's what I've found, is it releases pressure on the clinicians and the system. You're not trying to do everything for everybody all the time. And personally, and I've practiced in persons in a way for a long time and been very deliberate about the approaches. And you just have much better conversations with patients and you make more progress. And to be honest with you, it feels much better all around.
So we haven't been explicit really about some of the benefits for patients that this approach has. Can you tell me a bit more about that?
Yeah, I mean, well, the evidence suggests that when people are more in control, when they feel they've got more of a role to play, some people use the language of activation. When patients are more activated, they do better. The evidence is really clear about that. They do have better health outcomes. They use resources much more appropriately. They have better relationships with us. You know, we have much more interesting conversations. So the evidence is there. It is, you know, of course, tricky to put something new into practice, though, isn't it?
You've sold the idea to me. What is the best model for teaching these kind of skills to the team? And is there any evidence to back this up?
I mean, there's certainly lots of evidence. I mean, you know, it's a complex area, isn't it? And getting really clear evidence of exactly what works can be difficult in complex areas. We're very used to that in general practice, aren't we? But there was a fantastic project a couple of years back called Realising the Value. It was a collaboration between Nesta, the Health Foundation, NHS England. And they looked in depth about what sort of things help support personalised care approach and community-based approaches. It was a two and a half year project. They went through lots of evidence reviews, trialled a few things out. And the sort of things coming out, you know, health coaching, using peer support, group sessions, the sort of care planning and shared decision making, all those sort of things came clearly to the fore as the things that work really well. So I think the models, I guess, are around how we look at people's current situation, because there's no one size fits all for any of this, and what will work best for you, what sort of tools, what resources are right for you at that time, and what can you embed into your system at that time.
Can you tell us a bit more about health coaching? What is it? How does it work?
Yeah, so health coaching, I mean, it's as much a mindset as anything else, I think. It's you take the approach that you do believe people have assets, and that you're going to sort of encourage people to bring these assets out and be involved and engaged. But I guess that's the sort of coaching angle. The health bit is when we bring in all the things that we know, all the sort of intelligence we have from our training, from the tests we've done on people, from the diagnosis we've made, and you combine those two things together. So you're looking really to create collaborative plans, to create a shared approach, a partnership approach moving forward, taking the resources and assets that people have themselves and the resources and assets that we as healthcare professionals can bring to the table.
So it's an additional set of tools, really, for members of the team.
Yeah, it's complementary. And I mean, sometimes people sort of roll their eyes and they think, oh, God, it's another thing on top. But I think what I'm trying to get across is it's a way of working smart. So it's very much a way of not doing the things that you've kind of maybe spent a lot of time and energy and effort on that just aren't really that helpful at that time. So it helps you to work smarter, I think.
So the Primary Care Institute is going to be responsible for accrediting training in this area. How are we going to make sure that this is really good value and effective training and just doesn't become a tick box exercise?
Yeah, it's important, isn't it, really? And it's, you know, that's the trouble, isn't it? When you get diktats from up high, you must do this. They put trainers out there and it can just become a tick box exercise that people just want to get through. So for me, it really is about the mindset. You know, you can't tell people what to do. They have to feel it for themselves and they have to realize the benefits through practicing it themselves. So any training needs to be hands-on and it needs to give the people the chance to practice and develop their skills. But clearly you do need some enablers, don't you? You do need time to be able to start to learn new stuff. So if this is going to help us to work smart, then maybe we need to create time and space for this. And in order to do that, you know, that's system approaches, isn't it? So it's giving, you know, making sure you see the right people, they're set up well, you've got enough time to have a person-centered conversation. You understand the skill sets of having that conversation. And then tools, I've mentioned the activation, so some things like the patient activation measure, which I know NHS England are very keen on, and some people again think, oh, it's just another tool. But if you use it well, it can help you to tune in to what's right for that person at the right time. So you can stratify your approach and make sure it's the right person with the right amount of time, you know, approaching someone in the right way to get the best out of that situation.
And how does that tool work, Ollie? How do you use it in practice?
Yeah, well, we've been experimenting with it in Sheffield. We were for quite a while, for about 5 years now. We were one of the pilot sites, and it's a questionnaire. You know, all questionnaires have their limits, don't they? But it's an evidence-based way. There's a 10-question version we use now, which is, you know, the key with a questionnaire is it gets to the smallest number of questions that enable you to validly and reliably differentiate people. And it divides people into one of four groups in terms of their self-management capability. So level one, where they're really not, don't see any role for themselves at all. Level two, a beginner. Level three, an intermediate. And level four, an expert, really. And then you can apply a different approach. You know, if you were learning any new skill, you'd want to know at what level someone's at, you know, and put them in the right class, if you like. And you know, if you think about that, if someone's not really on the page for wanting to have anything to do with health, your first step is to help them to understand why it might be useful. Not to talk health at all, really. So it might even be that it's a non-health person that talks to people at the lowest levels of activation.
So it sort of enables you to tailor your approach to each cohort, if you like, of patients.
Absolutely. I think tailoring is the key word in personalised care. So, you know, it is about trying to be individualised. And PAM is just one of a range of tools we can use, tools and techniques that we can use to work smart in this area.
There does seem to be quite a lot of terminology, doesn't there, around tools in this area beyond the patient activation tool that we're talking about. I mean, where do things like sort of motivational interviewing and that sort of strategy, how do they all fit together? Are they completely different things?
No, I don't think so. And you know, anyone who's been around long enough realises that there's not so many variations on a theme, is there? You know, motivational interviewing is a great tool. I would definitely put it in the personalised care camp. It's very much around trying to assess people's readiness for change and then tailoring your interventions and the way you talk to people around that. So very much in the personalised care. Perhaps motivational interviewing is perhaps around a specific topic and subject of a specific change, a behaviour change. Coaching probably is a slightly more umbrella term. It's around a more generic approach, I would say, to how you encourage people to take a lead for themselves and feel they can draw on their own assets and be part of the partnership approach. So motivation interviewing might be a subset of that.
So as a clinical director yourself, what are your plans for embedding personalised care across your primary care network?
You know, well, I certainly won't tell people what to do. That would be the wrong thing, wouldn't it, as a coach? So, you know, I think it's often about demonstrating some of the benefits, you know, how, and, you know, often patients are the best advocates for that. People that have had experience of personalised approach and benefited from it are often really good at feeding back. You need some quick wins, don't you? You know, how can you use some of the things I've discussed to create some breathing space? You know, we're all a bit overwhelmed, aren't we? But if we could do a little bit less in this area here, so we can do a little bit more here, you know, that's much more persuasive than just saying, hey, guys, you just got to work a bit harder or run a bit faster. We definitely can't do that. And, you know, good access. You mentioned training that the Primary Care Institute is going to kind of endorse and develop. You know, good training for both clinicians, but also for managers. You know, if we're going to have to adjust the system and enable the system to let this happen, then the managers will need to be on board and be able to tune the systems as well.
So are there any particular resources that you would signpost your fellow clinical directors or PCN leaders to?
Yeah, so I mean, I've mentioned a few organisations that I think have been real leading lights. So the Health Foundation, Nesta, they're all, they're sort of independent think tanks that have got, on their websites, have got fantastic resources around person-centred care. National Voices, which is the collaboration of patient representation bodies, again, really strong on this, and they've got lots of really good resources on their website. And of course, the Personalised Care Institute that the Royal College of GPs is putting together is going to be a great asset, isn't it, in trying to pull this together and coordinate the language, coordinate the approach, you know, not make it overcomplicated.
That sounds like a tremendous set of resources, Ollie. Thank you very much. And they will be available on the RCGP website at www.rcgp.org.uk. Thank you so much for joining me today, Ollie. Your passion is really infectious, and I think you've persuaded us all of the benefits of a personalised care approach.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. Good luck, folks. We know it's not easy, but go for it.
And if you'd like to listen to further podcasts in this series, a list of topics and associated resources is available on the primary care development pages of the Royal College of GPs website at www.rcgp.org.uk. That's all for now, and thank you for listening.